Hi and welcome back to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. Today I am super excited and honored to be joined by Andrew Masigan. He is a well-known economist in the Philippines as well as a business and political columnist for two of the Philippines' major publications, The Business World and Phil Star. Andrew, though, isn't just an academic. He is also a highly successful and very involved entrepreneur and a big part of the business community here in the Philippines. So it's fantastic to have him on the show. I really tapped into all of his knowledge and insight into the Philippine economy from an economics point of view. And of course, we talk about the contribution of outsourcing into that, and of course, the impact of COVID and his expectations for the recovery and rebuilding of the Philippine economy in a post-COVID world. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. I really enjoyed talking to Andrew. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Hi and welcome back, everybody. Today I'm super excited to be joined by Andrew Masigan. He is an entrepreneur. He's an economist, and he's a business and political columnist for Business World and Philippine Star. He recently, of course, caught my attention for the outsourcing article that he had written, and I wanted to get him on the show because of his insights as an economist and a business person very much on the ground here in the Philippines. So, Andrew Masigan, thank you, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Derek. Happy to be here. Happy to be your guest.
So I want to really focus and drill down on your skills and insights as an economist foremost, but we can maybe touch on some of those other aspects.
Sure.
I suppose initially for those in the Philippines, but also those outside of the Philippines, can you maybe give a 10,000 foot view of the Philippine economy and its main drivers?
Okay. So, all right. The Philippine economy is one of the more dynamic I would say economies, at least before the COVID pandemic struck. It was one of the more dynamic economies in the region, and I'm talking about Asia, which is saying a lot considering that this is the fastest growing region in the world. So prior to the pandemic, the economy was growing at about 6.3% on average, between 2016 and 2019. So what are the drivers of the economy? Well, first and foremost, this is a consumer-led economy. It is not a production-led economy, okay? So as opposed to the economic model of Vietnam, wherein their economy is driven by the intake of foreign investments and exports, what we do, what fires up the Philippine economy is consumption among the population, government spending, and also fueled by OFW remittances. Okay, so the production in the Philippines is really domestically driven and not export driven. So yes, there are exports, $70 billion worth of exports last year, which is not small. But what's really driving the economy, as I said, is consumption.
And that makes a strong economy, doesn't it? There is good consumer demand.
It's good and bad. Okay, it's good. Let's put it this way: China is trying very hard to be a consumer-led economy like we are. Okay, and what that means is that we're not sensitive, or we're not vulnerable to external shocks. Like, for instance, China received took a hard blow from the trade war with the U.S. No, so their exports fell, and it affected their growth prospects, etc. The same thing with Vietnam. Same thing with Thailand. These problems are not beset on the Philippines because it's the local consumption that fires up the economy. On the other hand, since we are a consumer-led economy, we tend to import much of the things that we don't produce, and that is on the negative side of it. So it's not uncommon in the Philippines that we would rather import, let's just say, beef or poultry or pork or vegetables, only because the production's not sufficient to meet the demand.
Okay, and what are some of the main drivers of...
Was I clear about the concept of a consumer-led economy?
Yeah, absolutely. My sort of layman understanding of that is that to have a consumer-led economy, you need a relatively affluent economy. In developing economies, if there isn't the affluence, then the consumers don't have the money to spend. So is that an indication that the Philippines is now becoming a relatively affluent economy with a middle class that has the capacity to spend?
Absolutely, Derek. You know, before the pandemic struck, we were, if I'm not mistaken, let's talk about per capita income, okay? We were $30 away from being classified as an upper middle income economy. And that says a lot because we're 112 million people, no? So to pull 112 million people to upper middle income status on average says a lot about the growth of the middle class. And it's precisely this growth of the middle class that has driven this consumer-led economy, because it's the middle class, after all, who are buying houses, who are buying cars, who are spending on travel, who are spending on leisure, okay? So that's what's driving the economy. And okay, now the next question, or the next logical question to ask, is how is the population able to amass so much income such that they are now middle class, classified as middle class? Well, what's driving it is number one is OFW remittances, and the second is services. Okay.
So, and just to translate that, OFWs is overseas foreign workers or Filipino workers. Yeah, and that is the export of people and professions overseas to businesses. And it's the migrant working community, effectively, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. There are 10 million Filipinos working abroad, and collectively they pump in some $35 billion into the economy and send it to their families and send it to whatnot. And this windfall of income is used to fire the local economy. So this income that they receive from abroad, it's actually free money, is what many families use for their daily consumption and for their purchase of houses and cars and whatnot. So that's overseas Filipino workers. That's what OFW stands for.
And it seems that to me, that seems to create a very resilient economy, because even if hypothetically the Philippine economy failed, it still had all of the income as a result of the success of all of these other global economies. So does it mean that it's, you know, because it's so networked, that it's actually quite a resilient economy?
Yes, you're correct in that. And we're not alone in the world who has this, let's say, leg to run on, you know, this economic leg to run on. Mexico is the same. India is the same, and China is the same, all of whom, including the Philippines, all of whom have a large population working abroad and repatriate a chunk of, you know, income. So these countries, Mexico, China, India, and the Philippines, have that leg to run on, and it fuels local consumption. So, like I said, maybe we're lucky that we have this extra leg to run on, but it has augured well. It has worked well towards increasing income and putting us on the fast track of growth.
And this might be a leading question now, Andrew, but how does outsourcing and the BPO sector fit into the economy, and what's its contribution like?
Well, the outsourcing sector is the second, largest contributor to the economy in terms of economic output. So last year, it generated something like $26 billion. So that's about 7.1% of gross domestic product. So it is substantial. It is substantial.
Fantastic. And so where are we now then? Obviously, you know, in the last year, the global economy has been through the biggest upheaval ever. We're all faced with COVID. There's a lot of lockdown. As you say, the Philippine economy, the Philippine prospects were looking super rosy prior to COVID. And where are we now?
Yes, super rosy before all this. Okay. And remember, Derek, I said we're a consumer-led economy. Okay. So it's precisely because we're a consumer-led economy that the pandemic hit us hard. Now, with the lockdowns and the forced quarantine of the population, obviously the consumption of goods and services were curtailed, and we're still under lockdown technically, Derek. No, so we have the world's strictest and most continuous lockdown. We have that distinction. So as a result of that, people unable to go out and buy goods and services and all, the economy contracted by 9.5% last year. It's quite substantial. It's quite substantial. Now, on the flip side, and here's where it helps to be a production-led economy like Vietnam is, okay? So Vietnam is a production-led economy whose main bread and butter are exports, right? So they didn't contract last year because exports continued, okay? Wow. So in that sense, it works to be a production-led economy rather than a consumer-led economy. So, like I said, it works. It's neither good or bad, but it's just the way our economies are set up. So, so yes, we contracted by 9.5% last year.
Do you see outsourcing, which is, you know, in effect an export industry, and again the success of outsourcing is not so dependent on the Philippine economy, but of course the economy and the industries overseas. Now, all of those have taken a hit with COVID, but do you see, again, that fanning out of distributed risk and exposure helps the Philippine economy? And also because, you know, outsourcing can be counter-cyclical, where it comes into play when people are looking to save money. Do you sort of see outsourcing as a strong leg for the regrowth of the economy?
You know what? That's a really an interesting question, Derek, because among all the industries, okay, so if you look at the plethora of industries, strong industries at play in the Philippines, you have manufacturing, you have infrastructure development, you have food production, and you have services for which outsourcing or BPO services are a part of, okay? And if you look at all these industries, you'll find that the BPO service sector was the most resilient of all. And this is because it hasn't stopped. Whereas people, for a while, people stopped buying cars, stopped buying properties, stopped buying luxury goods, okay, because they couldn't go out of the house. BPO services continued. And that sort of helped support the economy during the lockdown. So yes, it is, to answer your question, yes, it is one of the more resilient sectors of the economy. Still going strong, actually.
In your Business World and Philstar columns, you regularly critique the country's infrastructure and also, you know, education, all of the infrastructure, in hopes, of course, that the Philippines can maintain a trajectory to become really a first world country.
The Philippines, from 2010 to 2015, spent only 2 to 3% of gross national product on infrastructure spending. Okay. And that was done on purpose. Okay. That was in order to shore up, it's called fiscal discipline. No? That's in order to shore up our gross international reserves. In other words, money in the bank, and improve our credit rating. Now, come 2016, we found ourselves in a position wherein we were our debt levels, or our debt rating, let's put it that way, our debt ratings were classified as one of the highest in the world, investment grade, no? So we were classified in the same category as Ireland, certainly better than Italy, better than many, many European countries. So not as sterling as Singapore, but maybe at the level of Australia in terms of debt levels are concerned. So having a investment grade debt rating and massive liquidity, something in the neighborhood of $100 billion, allows us to borrow from international banks at very, very prime rates. Okay, so beginning 2016, government embarked on an aggressive infrastructure development project program, wherein we are now spending between 5 to 7% of GDP on infrastructure development. So, Derek, you're here in Manila, right? And you see it all around you. New skyway systems, new highways are being built almost every month. There's a launch of a new highway. There's a launch of a new train line. We're building subways. We're building new airports, and it's happening every month. And that's a result of our ability to borrow cheap.
Is this then, you know, in simple terms, an affluent country? What does the, you know, is the country in a budget surplus? What are the tax receipts like? And what is generally the income for the government? Is it good?
Yes, the government is spending a lot on infrastructure. And before the pandemic struck, okay, we're on a budget deficit, and our budget deficit is 3% of GDP. Now, in context, 3% is nothing. If you look at other countries, Italy, for instance, Greece, they go as high as 10-15%. If you look at countries like Vietnam, for instance, they're going as high as 6 or 7%. Sorry, 5 to 6% for Vietnam. So our 3% budget deficit is nothing. It's no big deal. Let's put it that way. I think the bigger question is to look at the debt level of the country in relation to our GDP. No, so if you look at our debt ratio, foreign debt ratio to GDP, it's only at 42%. Ranges from 39 to 45% of GDP. Now, for context, debt to GDP ratio of Japan, for instance, is more than 200%. Of Singapore is more than 200%. Of the United States, it's more than 300%. So our debt level being at 45% is really, really excellent. It's like underutilization of available funds. It's almost appearing that way, no? So no issue in as far as debt levels and deficits are concerned. But you did ask too, Derek, about the tax system.
Yeah, absolutely.
Curious that you asked me this question, only because there is a law that has just passed the bicameral committee in the Senate and Congress, and this is as good as passed. And this is the second tranche of our tax reform. okay? And this will matter a lot to foreign companies coming to the Philippines to invest. Now, let's talk about corporate income tax. Corporate income tax is something that most investors look at, okay, when deciding whether or not to come into a country. Okay, so before this law, the Philippines had a 30% corporate income tax. Compare this to 24% in Malaysia and 22% in Indonesia. Okay, so we were really quite high in as far as corporate income tax is concerned. Now, when this law is passed, which I suspect it will be passed in 2 weeks or so, okay, corporate income tax will be reduced to 25%. So from 30, it's slashed by 5%. Although it's not as low, it's 1% away from Malaysia. Malaysia is still lower, and Indonesia is 3% lower. It's still a substantial cut. Okay. However, it's the deductibles that are that spells the difference. Because in the Philippine tax system now, if you reinvest your profits into business expansion, you can deduct 50% of your invested profits against your tax for the next year. If you invest in R&D or skills training or upskilling, you can deduct up to 100% of your expense to your taxes the following year. So, all in all, bottom line is I think we should be one of the most attractive, we should have one of the more attractive tax systems now in the region.
That is really exciting, isn't it? And it's really good to see a lot of progressive moves adopted by the Philippine government.
Yeah, it is.
The outsourcing industry requires high education and skill levels. What is the government doing for education and skill development?
So there is a conscious effort on the part of the Department of Education and the Commission on Higher Education to skew our to revise and revamp our curriculums towards the new technologies that are prevalent today. So we're talking about artificial intelligence, we're talking about cloud technology, we're talking about deep learning. So as we speak today, our curriculums in engineering, computer science, and all that are being revised. We understand, the country understands that technology is moving at lightning speed, no? So our educational system has to follow suit. Now, for the longest time, the Philippines it's a cultural thing, I suppose, that most families encourage their children to be in the medical field. I don't know why, but that's been the a cultural, let's call it a preference, no? As far as career choices are concerned, there is a campaign there is a campaign that's initiated by the Department of Education to encourage children to take up courses on the engineering side. So we hope that in the next 10 years or so, we will be as adept in engineering as we are in the medical field.
There is now a lot of affluence and wealth in the cities, but a lot of that has not trickled down into the provinces. Do you see that the provinces and eventually the majority of the population will also see the benefits of this economic growth?
Okay, it's always that way for any country that's becoming more affluent. We've seen it in Japan in the 1960s, where development was centered around Tokyo, Osaka, Fukuoka, and that was the engine of growth. And then later on, it trickles down to the countryside. Well, in the case of the Philippines, we're beginning to see it already, thanks to the outsourcing industry. We've seen certain cities outside Metro Manila and Metro Cebu begin to develop. So Cagayan de Oro is somewhere, is a city in the south, which is becoming like an up-and-coming destination for BPO services. Iloilo, the same. It's becoming the new Bangalore of, so to speak, of business process outsourcing. I suppose, Derek, that it's a matter of, it's only a matter of time before it trickles down in the countryside.
Fantastic. That's obviously good news. Mm-hmm. And Andrew, where do you see then the immediate or initial prospects for the Philippines with its battle with COVID and back to normalization of the economy?
Great question. And that's, I suppose, the question in everyone's mind. Now, like I mentioned earlier, we are a consumer-led economy. So the sooner that our people, our population, can get out there and get on with their lives, and the lockdown lifted, so people can consume goods and services like they did before, that will determine the speed of our recovery. So, which means this dovetails to the country's national vaccination program. Okay, so at the heart of the program is to achieve herd immunity, and you achieve herd immunity when 60% of your of the population is inoculated. Okay, now the program of government is to inoculate or to vaccinate 70 million of our people, okay, by the third quarter of this year. Okay, now I know that's quite ambitious. The question is not so much on the availability of vaccines, because the orders have been made to among seven vaccine makers. So from Pfizer to Moderna to Sinovac to Novavax, Johnson & Johnson, and the Russian made one. And one more, I forget. But there are seven suppliers who are committed to supplying the, or to providing the vaccine supplies that we need, okay? The question really now is the logistics, okay? As you very well know, we are a country of 7,107 islands, for which there will be 4,156 vaccination centers. Now, getting the vaccine to this 4,000 plus vaccination centers is a challenge, considering that there is a temperature protocol that we have to follow. So that's what government is working on now. Okay, as we speak, the first tranche of vaccines are already arriving, and the first layer of because the people who are supposed to receive the vaccines are prioritized, no? So the first people who are supposed to receive it are the medical workers who treat COVID patients, and they're supposed to receive their vaccination this week and next week towards March. So they'll be the first one this quarter, and then the second quarter will be the next trench of people who are government workers and military people and the police. They're the second in the totem pole of priorities. They'll receive theirs on the second quarter. On the third quarter will be the next tranche of people again. So will we be able to achieve 70 million vaccinations in the first by the third quarter of the year? We'll have to wait and see. It really all depends on the logistics chain. But one thing is for sure is that it's part of the program of the government. It's in the program, it's in the plan, that's the intention. Will we achieve it? We'll have to wait and see. There are many things to consider, Derek, like the weather. If we're hit by a typhoon, then that stymies the whole program. So, you know, things like that we have to put into consideration.
Andrew, I want to finish with this question, maybe. Allowing for or hoping for a complete resolution of COVID and return to some sort of normality, where do you see the future potential for the Philippines? Do you think it could become another Singapore, a true first world country? Where do you see the full potential for this country?
Okay, for anyone who hasn't been to the Philippines in the last 5 years. If you go to the business centers like Makati and Ortigas and Bonifacio Global City, the quality of life and the infrastructure is already akin to Singapore. But remember, Singapore is a city-state, so the area of Singapore is really 1/10 of the size of Metro Manila. The Philippines is a big country, so it takes a while before the whole country turns into a Singapore, so to speak, okay? But we're getting there. Now, let's talk about, first, we have to get over this COVID thing, okay? So the prognosis, according to the World Bank, the IMF, and also most economic think tanks, is that this year, we should post a growth of between 6.5 to 7.5%. Okay, and although that seems a little high, we have to consider that we're coming from a low base effect from 2020. So it only makes sense that our growth this year will be on the high side. In 2022, which is an election year, we're looking at growth of, well, there are two schools of thought here. Our national government says the economy will grow by between 8 to 10%. More conservative think tanks and myself, I'm putting it at between 6 to 7%. Regardless, by the year 2022, we should approximate where we were or revert to where we were in 2019. So by next year, I see us, the stigma of the COVID economic blowback behind us. And by 2022, we should be marching towards our economic programs and our economic aspirations again. So that's as far as COVID is concerned. The future is quite bright. And apart from services and apart from governance, let's put all of that aside because you know, it's hard to say who the next president will be, how the next government will be. That's hard to say. But what one thing is for sure is, one thing is certain is that we have the youngest population in the region, in Asia, for that matter. The average age of the Filipino is 24. As compared to the average age of the Thai, which is in the 40s, the average age of a Singaporean, which is in the 40s, the average age of a Japanese is in the 50s, we have the youngest population. And the majority of our population are just entering the workforce. So you can imagine the momentum of having the whole chunk of your workforce contributing to productivity. And this was the scenario of Japan in the 1960s. And that's where we are now. So am I optimistic? Yes, I'm quite optimistic. And as a matter of fact, there was a study recently made by Goldman Sachs who predicted that the Philippines would be the 18th largest economy by the year 2050. Okay, 2050. So that's still some ways from now. But by the year 2035, we should be 2035. That's 15 years from now. We should be the 22nd largest economy in the world. That's a $1 trillion economy. So quite big, and the future looks bright, Derek.
That's super exciting, isn't it? And how much of that do you think, you know, I think one of the rare and quite unusual characteristics of the Philippines is the incredible English and the almost universal use of English across the country. Do you, from an economics point of view, what is the value of that? It must be phenomenal that the average Filipino is able to integrate with the world's most powerful economies without any language barrier.
Yeah, well, Derek, you forget we speak Spanish also. A large population speaks Spanish as well. So we have that as an advantage. And how has it worked? Okay, it's benefited, English proficiency has benefited the country by way of attracting investments that are hinged on communications. So BPO services have benefited immensely from the English proficiency of the population. and which is why it's grown tremendously since 2007. So BPO is one of the big beneficiaries, shall we say, of English proficiency.
Fantastic. And thank you so much, Andrew. And it's great. We're obviously both huge proponents of the Philippines and Philippine economy, and certainly excited for it to be such a bright future ahead. Andrew, of course, if anyone wants to get in touch with you or read the work you do, how would you suggest they follow you or get in touch?
Well, I've just started, actually, Derek, with my video editorials. So they can subscribe to my YouTube channel and just search for Andrew Masigan, okay? And you can subscribe to my video editorials there. They can read me in Philippine Star or philstar.com. And if anyone wants to email me, they can reach me at andrew_rs6, that's Romeo Sierra number 6 at yahoo.com.
Fantastic. And we'll put all of that in the show notes. Yeah. Thank you so much, Andrew.
You're very welcome, Derek.
That was Andrew Masigan. He is an entrepreneur, an economist, and a columnist. If you want to get in touch with Andrew or get any of the links that we mentioned in this, go to our show notes, as always, at outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to email us to ask us anything, just email ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.